All right. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Friday evening, and it's sweltering here, and I know it's sweltering in D.C. where my host is. I am JT, and you know what time it is. It's no chaser time. So without further ado, let's bring in the host of this show, Mr. Mac Williams, and get this thing started. Hello there,
hey.
Mac.
Hey, what's up, Jerry? All right. I hope everybody had a great week. I had a great week. It comes too fast, though. I mean, it comes really, really fast. But anyway, thanks, Jerry, for introducing me, man, for being here for as long as we've been. We've been here over a year now, and I think we put together an impressive group of guests and people that have come in and out. Let me just say real quick, let me take some bills. Trinity Web Solutions is your solution for online content. If you need domain names, email addresses, want to build a website, whatever you need, please check out trinitywebsolutions.org. Check it out today. All right. Without further ado, I hope he's here. You think you got him, Jerry?
Oh, I know I do.
Okay, good. All right. Our guest for today is none other than Goodman alum, Washington, D.C. native, Brian Chase. Brian, welcome to the show, brother.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Yeah, we got yes, sir. Give me applause. That's right. We have Brian with us, and I've been long wanting Brian to be on this show, and it finally worked out because I got him here during the summer. He's playing down at the Goodman on a team called Backyard. And if any of you get a chance to come down and see Backyard, you want to see some good basketball, some good bump, please go to the GoodmanLeagueLive.com. Look at the calendar, look at Backyard. When you find it, make sure you be there for that game because you're in for a real treat. Brian, I wanted to get right directly to it because I know you have a game tonight and I know you got to leave out soon, so we want to get to it right now. One of the questions I want to ask you is when did you start playing basketball? I mean, at what age when did you realize that you were really better than the average guy, if you want to expound on that?
I wouldn't necessarily, like, for me, I was a late bloomer. Two of my best friends, they were playing, organized basketball way before I was. I was just kind of at the rec, just playing during recess in elementary school and all of that. So they were already traveling and things like that, but that was around 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, and, my best friend, which is my brother, which is Derek Payne, you know very well, he the one who really pushed me to say, man, you can play, you need to play somewhere, you need to do this, you need to do that, at least play for the school or something. Mm-hmm. I played for the school, but I wasn't necessarily so great. I really didn't have a lot of confidence in my ability more than anything, and that was in elementary school, junior high school, kind of the same. And then I'm going to say probably at 13 was the first year that, I realized that I could play a little bit. I never felt like, even still to this day, I never feel like I'm better than the next man. I just won't let nobody outwork me. So
okay.
I think everything or a lot of my success comes from the success that I've had is just from my desire. Because obviously if anybody has seen me before, I'm only 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not very big, but I just outwork everybody that I come in contact with. So that's what it boils down to.
Now, what school, high school did you play at?
I went to Dunbar Senior High School.
Okay, all right. And did you start every year there, or how did that go?
Well, it's funny how the whole process started because me and Derek Payne, we played together in junior high school. We played in elementary junior high school together. So we both were kind of like a tandem, and we always said that we'd go to the same high school and play together and win a high school championship, things of that nature. But that kind of got cut short because we got into a lot of trouble in junior high school. We didn't go to school. We cut class. We did the normal stuff
exactly
that probably any inner-city child probably would do. So his mother got tired of it. She separated us.
Okay.
So when she separated him from me. we were a bad influence on each other. So she transferred him, and when she transferred him, it actually gave me the opportunity. Like, I actually had to put my junior high school pretty much on my back. And I say this still to this day, and I never tell anybody this. You know, a lot of people won't believe it, but anybody who knows me knows that I'm not lying. In junior high school, that year that Dirk Payne left, I averaged 40 points a game. And that's when, yeah, it's not a game. And that's when I started to realize I could play a little bit, because that's when my confidence really, really, really started to grow. Because the year before, I was averaging maybe 18, 19, and Dirk was averaging like 38. And that's how it worked. I was a point guard, and I was throwing lobs to him in junior high school, and a lot of teams in junior high school thought that we were older than what we were, because I guess looking back on it, how advanced we were compared to everybody else. And that wasn't the case. So his mom did let us go to the same high school, and I wound up, you know, getting phone calls from just about a lot of the schools in the area, but mainly every public school. They called me, and I wound up going to Dunbar because of the approach in which, still to this day, my personal trainer is or was my high school coach. And it was just his approach to me. A lot of the coaches that approached me, they approached me with the conversation of, man, if you come here, you can shoot the ball as much as you want. We got a Nike contract, or you're going to have the newest Jordans to come out and things like that. And if you know who I am, that has nothing to do with the type of person that I am or basketball player that I am. It has nothing to do with Jordans.
Mm-hmm.
My coach, he just said to me, you know, he was just straightforward with me, man. I'm going to give you an opportunity to play. I'm not guaranteeing you a spot, but I'm going to give you an opportunity to come in here and work as hard as you can. And if you do everything you're supposed to do, you're going to play college basketball at the highest level. And that's my goal. That's what he said to me.
Mm-hmm.
And with that conversation alone, I chose Dunbar. And I honestly feel like if I didn't go to Dunbar, I probably wouldn't have a career as a professional basketball player right now.
Well, that's awesome.
Okay.
That was probably the biggest decision that I've made. And Dunbar prepared me for the next level. He prepared me as a man. Of course, I was a little intimidated once I got to college, but he prepared me mentally for anything that was thrown in front of me at any level whatsoever. And whenever I need a few words of wisdom, that's the same person that I call.
Now let me ask you this question, and this was interesting because of what you said, but I want you to stress again. Let me ask you this question, just a sidebar, and I'm gonna get back to you. But I want to ask you, what do you think? What is your opinion? Your honest opinion, brutally honest opinion, because what you just said is what's said a lot now, as far as how coaches approach players. What is your thought on AAU? And before you answer that question, let me give you my thought on it. I don't really like it, because I think when you let everybody and anybody do it, you're letting in the cockroaches, along with the people who really, there are people who love the game and want to do it the right way, but they're not getting sometimes all the right kids, because the charlatans and the people that are out there just trying to get a bunch of talented kids and throw them together. And I just think it's a meat grinder sometimes. So I'm not really in favor of it, because I didn't grow up with AAU. When I was coming up, I never heard of AAU. You know, you just went out and you just played all damn day, and you played in the gym at certain times, and that's how you got it. So I just want to know, honestly, what is your opinion of it, and would you let your son be in AAU, or how would you handle that?
First off, I think the positive with AAU is the fact that, you know, if you plan on a decent team or a team with quality players or anything like that, the exposure that your child or any child could possibly get from playing AAU because of the traveling and, you know, the college being able to see these kids firsthand as opposed to maybe even just watching film. So it gives you a lot of exposure, especially if you are with the right people or with at least the right team. And the negative side of it is, just like you said, you have the downside where people, coaches, they only in it for personal gain, where they trying to put together the most talent in the world, so they try to steal players from other teams and things like that. put together the best AAU team so that they can actually get ahead, whether it's coaching on the next level in college or making some money off of whoever's supposed to be the number one player in the country or the top player on their team, and they try to ride that kid back all the way to the NBA. That kid doesn't get – or as soon as his career falls off, even at the next level in college, you know, it's on to the next. And I think that's the problem with it, because I think more times than not, coaches or some of these AAU teams and the people who run them, they're only in it for personal gain, not necessarily for the
best interest of the child.
The best interest of the child, player, whatever the case may be. And that's what it all boils down to. And if to answer the second part of your question, I wouldn't have no problem letting my child play AAU, but at the same time, me as a father, knowing how the whole situation, how it goes, and knowing who's actually running some of these programs, and because I went through this process, I'm gonna be super hands-on with my child, with whatever team he's involved in, and I'm not the parent that, you know, will feel like just because that's my child, he's supposed to be playing in front of this guy.
Right.
I won't be that parent, but from a business standpoint, you know, I want my child to be in a situation where it's fair, where he, if he loses a job because, you know, the player or another player, you know, was better than him or won the job over him, I understand that. I'm not the one to take my son off the team because he's not starting.
Exactly.
He's not this. He just has to work harder. Now, that's where it's a thin line. It's a fine line because you have some players that, or coaches that might be, who knows, they just showing favoritism, or it might be their son that's in front of them. Okay, that's fine. But as long as it's a fair situation and I'm hands-on with my son and helping him understand that this is what it is, but I'm not going to allow these coaches or anybody else, speaking of these AAU coaches, to take advantage of my son and just have him there just because maybe I'm his dad or they feel like they're doing me a favor. You're not doing me a favor, but I'm going to be super hands-on in order to not let the BS, you know, creep in so that somebody can jump on my son's back and try to, you know, for their own personal gain or benefit later on the line.
Yeah, exactly. Jerry, did you have any a question?
No, just keep on going. I'll jump in when I can.
No problem. Then my next question I wanted to ask you also is, I've kind of heard the story, but I don't know if it's correct, so now I finally got the guy here that I can ask. How is it that you got your opportunity to first play in the NBA instead of just being, you know, how did you, I mean, I know you went to Tech, we know that.
Right.
But when you went to Tech, how did that happen? Because I heard the story, but I kind of heard it broken up into pieces.
All
I heard was Shaq and you was on the Heat. That's all I heard.
No. That's later on down the line.
Okay.
When I left, you know, a lot of people don't know, like, for me, if you know me and you know me personally, basketball is my everything. I'm married to basketball. I will play basketball anywhere, any game, any given time. And technically, basketball is my wife, my girlfriend, whatever you want to call it. Basketball has put me at my happiest point, and basketball has had me at my, you know, my worst point, my lowest point. Like, distress, couldn't figure it out. So with that being said, my lowest point was maybe my last 2 years of college.
Okay.
And I thought I was going to transfer, but then I was like, no, I done built relationships here. I was comfortable at Virginia Tech, but me and the coach didn't see eye to eye. Long story short, he took the basketball out of my hands, and if I continuously say this, if you know Brian Chase, I can shoot the basketball, right?
Yes, sir.
So one of the things that he said is, he didn't want me to shoot the basketball. Now you telling me, your point guard, not to shoot the basketball when I led the Big East in three-point percentage 3 straight years in a row.
Wow.
So he told me. He told me, and if you ever have Irk Easy Branham on this show, you ask him. We were at Virginia Tech together. He told the both of us, he don't want his point guard shooting the ball. If we shoot the ball, we coming out the game. So it kind of had us at a hindrance. You know, we were a little hesitant on doing this and doing that and doing this and doing that, and the whole time we might make a mistake. He'd take me out of the game, put me in the game. So my senior year wasn't what it should have been. And he really had me at my lowest point, to the point where I didn't even want to play basketball anymore. My mom was going through some situations or whatever personally, and I was just like, man, I'm done with basketball. I'm just going to come home, get a job, help my mom out. And that's what I did. So I graduated from Virginia Tech in 2003, December 2003. Came home and just worked. Laid down the farms, got a little part-time job at the recreation center, just worked. And that was it. And everybody kept asking me, I was going to run and shoot every day, man, why are you here? Why are you here? You come in here and you're playing well and can't nobody check you. You're not supposed to be here. And those questions started to get to me. And, you know, I got tired of it, but then at the same time, the itch was there to, you know, to play it at the highest level or at least play it competitively to see what can come out. And I wound up, prior to, I wound up getting a phone call from a guy who I had met. He was an assistant coach in McNamara, and still to this day, he's my agent. And I'm very big on relationships.
I can see that.
I'm very big on relationships and loyalty. You know, and if you know me, like I said, my best friend, all of my best friends, or all of my childhood friends, we are still tight till this day. And, Mac, you know at least three of them, which is Danielle, Derek, and Shaq.
Exactly.
Still to this day. We've never had any falling outs, and if we do disagree, who cares? But that's the cloth that I'm cut from, the pedigree that I have. I'm very big on relationships and loyalty.
Absolutely.
So we met in high school just playing summer league against the team that he was the assistant coach for. And I seen him maybe my sophomore, junior year of college, and he told me he was about, you know, he's trying to be an agent. He was breaking into the business. He was independent at the time. And I was like, oh, okay, good luck. He told me good luck with the rest of the season, blah, 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 but stay in touch. We didn't talk for a while. He had called me while I was working at the recreation center, and he said that he had had a job in the USBL for me, making a few hundred dollars a month or a few hundred dollars a week. I turned it down because I wasn't ready to leave because I felt like I wasn't done with the situation of helping my mom get back on her feet.
I got you.
So I didn't go, but then I got another phone call from John Thompson's nephew. And John Thompson's nephew, just a little background, John Thompson, the Hall of Fame coach from Georgetown, he grew up with my grandfather. So his sons grew up with my father. They're around the same age. His sons and his nephews and all them, they grew up with my father on the same side of town. And his I was playing up at Kenner League. I think after this game, I might have had like 8 or 9 threes in the game. And Ed came up to me, that's John Thompson's nephew, and he said, man, where you playing at? And I was like, man, I'm just here working right now, man. Got some stuff to take care of. He said, man, get the hell out of here. You're not supposed to be here. He said, I'm going to make some phone calls. That's exactly what he said to me. He said, I'm going to make some phone calls, and we're going to figure something out. A few weeks passed. I'm working at the rec. I got a phone call from him saying that he had talked to Jaren Jackson. And if anybody is familiar with Georgetown basketball, even the NBA, Jaren Jackson is a, you know, maybe 10, 12-year NBA veteran, played at Georgetown. He had got the head coaching job in the ABA. Jaren, I went up there to the tryout. Jaren didn't know who I was, but Ed and Big John had told him, you know, who I was, even related to the family. And I went up there. I tried out. I played extremely well, point blank. He was supposed to call me back, and then I got another phone call from someone else asking me did I want to try out for the Roanoke D-League team, which is 30 minutes from Virginia Tech, and they would allocate me to Roanoke if I signed the contract. Went down there, and I thought about it, like, man, I could go with Jaren, but then at the same time, that's the D-League, which actually gives me better eyes to maybe actually have that opportunity of making it to the NBA.
Exactly.
I said, man, I'm gonna go see what this tryout is about. So I left them. I signed the D-League contract, and I told Jaren I wasn't coming, and he said that that was a better opportunity. So go try to make that happen. That's what I did. I went down there. I played extremely well during the camp. It was a numbers game. They had drafted a point guard, and then they had already had a veteran point guard in Corey Alexander that played at UVA, who had 5, 6, 7 years in the league anyway. So I kind of was caught in the numbers, but I was trying to just play extremely well for them to cut the point guard that they had drafted, who was a rookie.
Okay.
They didn't cut him. They cut me. I came back. Jaren had already had his team in the ABA, but the team in D.C., which was the Maryland Nighthawks,
yep,
they had just had a team. And I was a running shoot. I can't even remember how the conversation happened, but White Chocolate, Curtis Yarbrough, Jason Williams, you know, just a
mm-hmm.
lot of local
yep.
talent.
I know them.
A lot of local talent was already playing on the team. And they asked me, man, you need to play with us. You need to play with us. I wasn't really necessarily interested.
Right.
But I called my agent at the time, you know, because we had linked back up, and he was like, all right, let's try to figure something out and let's grind this process out.
Right.
Just need to get you playing.
Right.
I played. And it's funny because when the game was going on, I mean, when I went up there and worked out with them one day.
Mm-hmm.
That was it, like on a Wednesday. They
mm-hmm.
had a game on a Saturday. And I never heard anything. I didn't hear anything back Thursday, Friday. That Saturday morning, Curtis Yarbrough called me and asked me, where was I? I told him I was in the house. He said, man, we got a game. They want you to play. Can you come? I was like, man, I ain't got no ride to the gym. If y'all meeting that run and shoot, I ain't got no ride right now because I didn't have the car.
Right.
The whole team bus came to my mom's house and picked me up with everybody. Listen, if I can sit here all day and tell you my story. Like, I honestly, I'm a very spiritual person. Like, and everything that has happened to me, it's not me.
I know.
It's destiny, and it's God first and foremost.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's exactly what I was thinking the whole time.
It's God. It has nothing to do with me. It just has everything to do with me not passing up none of the opportunities that God put in front of me. And
right.
that's
mm-hmm.
why, that's what has put me in position to actually take a bigger opportunity or take a bigger chance because, you know, I failed, but, you know, you're not going to know whether or not it's a good opportunity until the opportunity is over and done with. So they came to pick me up. I went up there. We drove to Pittsburgh, played in the game, played extremely well, and they kept me for the rest of the season. I wound up finishing the season averaging maybe 18, 19 points. We lost in the semifinals. From that, Jaren,
mm-hmm.
and we beat Jaren Jackson's team to go to the semifinals. Now,
wow.
he's the coach this time. So, as soon as that season was over, with Jaren Jackson got the head coaching job in the CBA,
wow.
I found out because I was working out up Bowie State with Derek Payne at the
mm-hmm.
time because he was going to Bowie State. We
mm-hmm.
was going up there during the summertime, and the coach told me,
mm-hmm.
I got on the phone. I called Jaren,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, look, coach, man, I don't want anything from you. Just give me the opportunity to come in there and compete for a spot. He said, all right, I'll be back down in D.C. because Jaren still lives in the D.C. area. I want to say he lives in Montgomery County.
Okay.
He said, I'll be back down there in a couple weeks. I'm going to call you when I get down there. Maybe a week or two passed. He called me, asked me where was I at, told me he was holding workouts at Bowie State for like 3 days. I went up there and worked out with him every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those 3 days, he called me a couple days later. He said, man, I just wanted to make sure you still was in shape and you still was doing what you were supposed to do. You know, you still quick, you still fast, you still shooting that ball like I knew you could do. I'm going to call you in a little bit because I'm waiting for everything to get finalized on my end. He called me maybe 2 weeks later and said, all right, camp starts November the 4th. That's the latest I can be there. The earliest I can be there was like October 25th, and that was like
okay.
open trials.
Okay.
I said, Coach Land, bring me out October 25th. I'm trying to show you I need this job.
Okay.
And he said, okay. I was the only one out of everybody that was invited to vet camp to go to the open trial. I played in the open trial. I dominated in the open trial. Took that same confidence into the camp, made the team, and I came off the bench. And I established some great relationships. I came off the bench, averaging maybe 25 to 30 minutes a game. And averaged 15 points and 4 assists off
wow.
the bench. And
wow.
we lost in the championship. And from that point, now mind you, Cliff Levingston, that played for the Bulls, Michael Jordan's teammate back in the day,
mm-hmm.
was our assistant coach.
Wow.
The night we lost in the last game of the finals in the CBA, he asked me, did I want to play again? And, you know, did I have anything planned? Was I going home, whatever. I said, wow, what you got on your plate? He said, man, My old college coach is the coach in the D-League, and he wants you to come play for him. I said, who is your college coach? He said, Kent Davis. And I said, Roanoke? He said, yeah. Lo and behold, this is the same team that cut me the year before. Same coach. Same coach. Exactly. And I did the same thing. I laughed.
I bet you did.
Now, I hadn't even taken a shower after the championship or nothing. I'm laughing just like you guys just did. Mm-hmm. Same coach, same team, same place, 20 minutes from Virginia Tech. I go down there. I played the last 6-7 games of the season, played extremely well, leave straight from there. I committed myself to playing the USBL for 2.5 months in Nebraska. I leave straight from Roanoke and fly to Nebraska.
Wow.
To Nebraska.
Wow.
Average maybe about 19, 20 points a game, 3-4 assists, something like that. We won the championship, and I was rated the number one minor league player in the country. And that was just from the grind. Just didn't pass up any opportunity. Every time they presented it with something, I took it. Okay, I got to go. I did that. And the last week before I was supposed to leave from the USBL, I got a phone call from my agent saying, man, we've been working. We've been working. He took some of my best games from the CBA. And he sent them, he shot them around to a couple teams. And one of the relationships that he had was, you know, the head scout for the Utah Jazz. And the game that he saw that he was really impressed with, of course, I'm 5'9½", 5'10". But this game, I think this is probably my professional career high. I had 47, 5, and 5. And he used that game, and he was looking, and he told me exactly what the scout was saying. Like, man, he's small. He looks like he's not a point guard, but he can damn sure score the basketball. That's exactly what he said.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, well, we'll see. So my agent, he working. But I get a phone call before this. Well, yeah, before Utah makes the decision, man, Cleveland want to bring you in for a workout.
Wow.
I fly from Nebraska straight to Cleveland. I don't even fly to D.C. I left all my clothes in my house, in my apartment in Nebraska. Left everything there. I probably took a duffel bag and left everything in Nebraska and had them ship it to my mother's house. I fly to Cleveland, work out there for a week with probably 6-7 players.
Right.
I lasted the whole week along with two other guys. The workout went extremely well. So shot the ball well. Matter of fact, if you remember, North Carolina got Shamon Williams was there, D.C. native. Mm-hmm. Roger Mason was there.
Yep.
A couple of other guys that was playing overseas at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We sitting back waiting to see if Cleveland was going to bite on at least a summer league invite because of all the work that I put in the minor leagues.
Right.
Me being rated the number one minor league player, and, you know, that's a lot. That's a big part of what contributes to the opportunity.
Right.
So next thing I know, my agent called me and says Utah is – They really like your film. They don't know if you're a one or a two. I told them that you're a chameleon. You can fit into any situation. Whatever your role is, you're going to do it. And at that time, my role was to score because our leading scorer had left. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
They said, okay, well, we're going to bring him in as long as we don't draft a point guard. Now, they drafted a point guard in D. Brown, and this was Darren Williams' second year. So they drafted D. Brown, which was Darren Williams' college teammate, that, you know, the previous year. They drafted Paul Millsap. They had 2 second-round picks, Paul Millsap and D. Brown. They had the 44th and the 45th pick back-to-back. The 45th pick, they took D. Brown. My phone blew up because everybody, you know, I let everybody know, as long as they don't draft the point guard, they're going to bring me in. Everybody called my phone. Oh, man, I hate Utah. I ain't never liked them. Carl Malone and John Stockton, I ain't liked them back then. You know, I'm getting these kinds of phone calls. They pissed off. I see why I ain't like, you know. And I'm sitting there like, oh, man, because I fell asleep on the draft. I fell asleep maybe right before those picks were to come out.
Right.
You know, everybody calling my phone 11:30 at night. They just pissed. So the next day I called my agent, and my agent was like, man, they still going to bring you in. I said, okay, all right. They still brought me in. I went to summer league. And I tell the truth. The first practice, I was nervous because I didn't know what to expect. Not nervous at a competition, but more so kind of shocked and caught up in the level. Like, how the hell did I get here? So right. I was trying to do everything technically right when I wind up doing everything technically wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just
mm-hmm.
playing what they really, really want to see, I wasn't just playing. Like, I was tight and I was tentative. But I got on the phone, I called my personal trainer, who was my high school coach, who was my basketball mentor, and he said he calmed my brain down. He calmed my mind down, and then the next day I went in there. That was really my first day, because I just played. Then I built off of that day. I just played. I just built off of that day. I just played. I just built off of that day, and I just played. Now, Darren Williams was playing at two summer league games. He only played mm-hmm. two summer league games, so I was the third point guard. Dee Brown was the second point guard. Darren Williams played his two games, and then I became the backup point guard. Played extremely well during the summer league. Utah invited me back to camp. And the reason why I made the team, let alone for my talent or my ability to shoot the ball, I just think I'm not the most talented person in the world, but I work harder than everybody. And I have mm-hmm. a skill set that a lot of people don't have. I went in
right.
the gym. When they brought me back to vet camp, I went in the gym. I was the first one in the gym, and I was the last one to leave. I went in the gym, and I was the first one in the gym, and I was the last one to leave. We
wow.
had one practice at 10 o'clock in the morning. I practiced 10 to 12, went back to the hotel, took a nap, came back about 6, left out of the gym about 8:30, 9 o'clock. Now, mind you, I didn't even know this, but they have a video system, so every time you punch the code in, it records, or the cameras, they turn on.
Mm-hmm.
So they could see who was coming in and out of the gym at what time and all of this stuff. They knew that I was coming in the gym every single day. Even one time, we had a preseason game. I didn't play much. We got off the plane maybe 7 o'clock. I went back to the gym at 9 o'clock. And when I went back to the gym at 9 o'clock, one of the ladies who works for the Jazz, she's like the secretary or something like that, her daughter
mm-hmm.
was having a wedding reception. Family came down, they shook my hand and talked to me, oh my gosh, I'm going to tell Coach Sloan that, man, you just work so hard because I be here late and I see you come in every day, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know this. It was a shock to me, but I just knew I wanted
right.
it more than anybody else.
Right.
And it came down to me and a big guy. And that last day, the cut day, because they had already cut everybody else. The only two free agents that was on the team that was still trying to make the team was me and the 6'10 guy who I just knew. In the back of my mind, I'm like, man, he's 6'10. He can rebound his ass off.
Absolutely.
I'd
have thought
like,
the same thing.
I could shoot my ass off, but we both kind of playing the same minute. So, that doubt started to creep in that last
right.
day. I was confident
right.
all the way up until that last day when it actually came down to the time. I walked in there. We actually rode to practice together, cut day, that morning. I walked in the locker room. I'm the first one in. We the first one is the first ones in the locker room. And the head trainer came out and told him, I need to see you for a second, son. Coach Long wants to talk to you. Not to me though. He said this to the big guy. So I'm
right.
like, I don't know what's going on. I just continue go to my locker, start changing my clothes, and then the assistant trainer came. Pulled me to the side, then I just wanted to be the first to congratulate you, man. You made the fucking team. And he gave
wow.
me the biggest hug. He gave me the biggest hug
right.
in the world.
Wow.
And it was kind of a thing, like, it really didn't set in.
It right? was surreal.
It was too surreal.
Yeah.
So I left. I mean, I went, this before practice. So the cuts happened. That cut happened before practice. So 9 o'clock in the morning. I find this out. We go on with practice. They cut him, took him back to the hotel, got his stuff, booked his flight, and all that other stuff.
Right.
We go on with practice. So I'm the third point guard. Well, sort of count, I'm the fourth point guard because at this time, Darren Williams was the starter. Derek Fisher was the backup. Steve
wow.
Brown
okay.
was the third. And I was the fourth.
Okay.
Go on with practice. Finished. Practice finished. I go back to the hotel. Man, and this is probably this was the third time in my life that I've cried tears of joy. I got back to the room, man, and I couldn't believe it. I was just laying in the bed. And tears just came down. I didn't even know what it was from, but it was just, an emotional moment for me because of the symbol that I knew I'd have dedicated 20 years to this craft.
Right.
And it was something that I really didn't even pick up till late, but I dedicated my time to it, and look what done happened.
Exactly.
I'm one of 450 that everybody's trying to, you know, they trying to get to that point.
Exactly.
And my agent called me that night, and he was like, man, they told him, they said, man, Jerry Sloan is one of those tough, hard-nosed guys that he says, man, it's just too hard to cut a guy that works that hard. That's
right.
Exactly what he told me. That's it.
Right.
And that's how I made it to the NBA.
Wow.
The next year was the whole situation with Shaq. Because, like, I was working out with Gilbert Arenas leading up, going to Utah during that summer. Because Gilbert was playing on our team down the farms. And I told him, I was like, man, look, I'm a fan for something. And I humbled myself. Usually I don't even talk to people. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I humbled myself and I told him, I'm like, man, you right here in my face. You're an all-star, whatever. Man, I need that work. He was like, man, just meet me at the Verizon Center, 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock at night. And I did that twice a day, two straight summers. And then the following season after I left Utah, I played summer league with the Wizards, and I was going back to camp with the Wizards. It just so happened, chance opportunity, like I told you, everything that happens is not me, it's God.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to do with a lot of the situations that I've been placed in, but I just took full advantage of these situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jack comes down to the farm. He just walks in into the farm. Nobody knows he's coming. He sits right next to Miles at the score table, and the game goes on. Now, mind you, I'm on the floor with Gilbert Arenas, Deshaun Stevenson, Andre Blatches on the other team, Dave Hawkins on the other team,
right?
Ice on the other team.
Right.
His players on the floor.
Right.
But I'm on the floor with three, four NBA guys. And Miles just comes on the mic and he says, man, my time. The big fella, the Diesel, says that he likes the all-met point guard out of Dunbar. And he asked Miles, like, what was I doing? Did I play anywhere? And Miles told him, he was like, yeah, he was in Utah last year. They cut him. He wound up playing in the D-League. He just got finished playing with the Wizards, blah, blah, blah. Miles told him my resume. And then Miles told him that I was going back to camp with the Wizards. On the mic, Shaq said, he's not going back to camp with the Wizards. He's coming to Miami with me.
Oh! Oh!
That's the story.
I'm serious. He said, he's coming to Miami with me. And Miles said, man, is it okay if I give him your info? I was like, man, are you crazy? What are you saying?
Yeah, right.
He gave him my information. As soon as the game was over with, I called my agent, told him what had just happened. Shaq was down the farm. He said that I'm going to Miami. I'm not coming back with the Wizards. But my agent immediately gets on the phone and calls the general manager for the Heat. And he talked to him. He was like, I haven't talked to Shaq in a while. You know, in a few days, but he should be back down here in a few days or next week sometime. So maybe about 4 days, lad, the general manager calls my agent back and says, yeah, we talked to him. And he said, man, it's this little, I'm not going to curse, but he called me something in D.C. that I fell in love with. Man, you need to get him down here. And Randy, the general manager at the time, which was Randy Fun, called my agent, said, yeah, we need to get them down there. So instead of them just bringing me and guaranteeing me and saying that, you know, they're going to bring me back to vet camp, they said, this is what we'll do. We'll bring them down here, and they had me compete against Chris Quinn, work out with him every day, shooting drills and everything. You know, I usually don't even talk like that, but
right.
I lit a torch to that boy that day, I mean that week.
I bet
let
you
it torch
did.
Him that week, and they partially guaranteed me, and they told me I went down there on a Sunday, started working out first thing Monday morning. Thursday morning, they said, look, you can stay here or you can go home first thing Friday morning, but you got to be back here by Sunday. I said, look, man, send me home real quick. I'll come back Saturday. I just need to go home and get the rest of my clothes. Because I'm here. And he was like, okay. They flew me back to D.C. I came. I packed my stuff. Told my godfather. Told my mother. Told my daughter's mother that I'm leaving. So she had to take my daughter. I jumped back on the plane. Went back to Miami. and had the best preseason that I could have even thought of. If Dwayne Wade was hurt, Shaq was hurt, I wound up being the second leading scorer during that whole preseason. And I
wow.
behind Yadonis Haslam. He averaged maybe 17 a game, and I was at like 13 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And on every coach's list, they wound up cutting me because my contract would have put them over the salary cap. And they wasn't going to waste a contract on a free agent, especially when D-Wade and Shaq wind up being hurt. So they wind up making a trade. They traded Antoine Walker, Michael Doliak, and Wayne Simmien to Minnesota and brought in Mark Blunt and Ricky Davis. That put them
wow.
against the salary cap. So they wind up cutting. But they told me to go back to the D-League. Don't go overseas. Go back to the D-League because we're going to call you up. So, the season starts to go in the D-League, and I'm waiting. I'm playing well. I'm playing well. So I go back to the same team, which is the latest D-League team. So I'm back in L.A. for a second season.
Right.
And I'm waiting. They talking to them. I'm waiting. They called up two people. They told my agent, man, we going to call them up. Just tell them be patient. They called up somebody else the next week, and I had a deal in Turkey for some money that I ain't never even seen before, never even heard of. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
I was like, man, I got to go. And then the very next day after I signed that contract and I left and I landed in Turkey, the very next day Miami called my agent and said, well, look, these are the terms of the contract, blah, 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 blah. We're going to call them up tomorrow. My agent told him I was already in Turkey. My team in Turkey wouldn't let me out of my contract. So I missed my call up, but I still made great money.
Okay. Hey, Mac, we've had a caller sitting online for about 20 minutes from the D.C. area. You want to bring this caller in or what?
Yeah, bring him in.
All right. Hello, caller from the 202. Welcome to the No Chaser with Brian Chase. What's your name and what do you have to say? Call
202. 202? Yes. Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead. If you have state your question.
I am truly proud. I just so happen to be Brian Chase's mother.
Hey.
And I'm listening to the interview. I missed the first bit of it because I couldn't get it online.
Okay.
I love him very much, and I am so proud to be his mom.
He's a very
you should be. I'm telling you, you definitely should.
All my hard work in everything he do, and I mean, I'm smiling from here to there all the time because of that, you know. So I could sit back, relax, and enjoy watching something that I had a lot to do with.
Amen.
For that, I'm proud.
Amen. Amen. It was good. I'm glad you called. I mean, you actually made Brian speechless.
Well, I thank God for the power of prayer because I put it in there a long time ago, and then I forgot about it. And next thing you know, it was looking me right in my face. What can I say?
Absolutely. God, the prayers of a righteous woman availeth much.
Yes.
Well, Brian, you've been talking all this time. I don't hear a word from you. What do you have to say about that?
Man, that'll take a whole nother show for me to really go into detail as to why my mom feels the way she feels. You know, we've been through a lot, you know, together, a lot of ups and downs and things like that personally. You know, and when I look at the situation that I'm in right now, it's kind of hard to even say it, but I use everything as motivation, and I'm just a regular guy that has been blessed, and I've maximized every opportunity that I've given, but I use everything that I've been through with my brother, my sister, my mother as motivation, and that's what keeps me, that's why I play the game. Mac, you done seen me play, that's why I compete the way that I compete.
Yeah.
That's why I play the game the way that I play the game, because I don't play the game for attention. I only play it for respect. I don't care how much respect I get from you, Matt, or from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I want more respect.
Exactly.
I just want to be respected at my craft.
Exactly.
And the people that don't like me or the people that's against me, I'm playing to make them respect me.
Exactly.
That's it. Basketball is my heart, it's my passion, man, and I use everything that I've been through as motivation to play the game the way that I play it, and that's why I do it.
So let me ask you this question as we draw to 7:45. Let me get to the crux of this, because I'm gonna be honest with you, Brian. Again, I've been blessed to have great guests on here, and you've been one of the. I have to put you up there with one of the best, because your story
yes.
is just is. I mean, I'm be honest with you. A few times I want to say, dude, if you ain't writing this down, if you're not putting this on pad to pen and writing this story, you need to be, because you may think this is funny, but I think you're going through this, and I'm a big believer, and I'm a Christian, born and raised pretty much from the age of 8. And, you know, the one thing I'll say to you, Brian, is that, like I said, nothing happens by accident, but God has orchestrated this, but you've used it to bless yourself, your family, and bless others. But I'm going to tell you, your blessing, ultimate blessing, is to share this with other people. And you have to put this pad to pen, because I'm sitting up here now, like, this is like watching a movie. I'm like, shoot, I done seen the first part. I'm ready to see the rest of it. Like, really, you going to cut it off on the commercial? Like, I want to see the rest of it. Because it's such an inspirational story. And I haven't heard one like this in a long time. Like I'm serious. Like, when you talk to this thing goes so seamless. Like, you haven't come to a point in this interview where you said, okay, this, everything went bap, 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 bap. And I think the thing that impressed me the most about what you said tonight, and I want you to expound on it, you know, for a few minutes as we close, I want you to expound on, because I want young kids and young basketball players and people who ever listen to this, whether it be tomorrow, weeks from now, days from now, whatever, I want you to speak to the fact of trying. The thing that you impress me most with, and this is not being done today, and I see it a lot, is that everybody's
right.
being choosy. You said, I took every, you didn't, in this whole discussion, you didn't one time say, I ain't take that because that was a little minor league, or that was something they weren't paying me, or they're paying me some short stuff, I don't know about that, I ain't going to do that. You went at every opportunity as if, I don't know what, you went with an open mind and said, I don't know what this is going to lead me or what it is. And every time you took a chance, it led to something else. And you got kids now who won't even do a semi-pro league, who won't even, if you're
right.
paying, I ain't trying to go. So
spend
a few minutes on talking to these kids out here. What lessons have you learned? And then just talk about the taking advantage. I just want you to speak to the kids, man, about what it takes and what it is. And for these last 15 so minutes, I'm shutting up. Say what you got to say, and at the end, then I'll end the show. But I'm definitely going to have you back on here before you leave for the summer. So you got to let me know, because I'm giving another part, too. That's definite. So go ahead.
Not a problem. You know, my whole approach, not even just with basketball, is, you know, everybody has to maximize. We all put here for a purpose, you know.
Exactly.
And once you figure out what your purpose is, man, you have to use every God-given ability that you have and maximize whatever that purpose is. Now, if your ability is physical and you can run with the fastest of them, or you can run, jump, football, basketball, tennis, it doesn't matter. You know, you figure out a way to fall in love with that sport. I've said it numerous times. I am not going to stop playing basketball until my legs don't work anymore. God has given me a gift, and that gift has to be used to the fullest of its ability. And I'm going to maximize that. Because when it's over, it's over. I don't want to have no regrets. And I'm one of those guys that I love what I do, so I never really have to get up and go to work. The toughest thing about my job is the fact that I actually, my career is overseas, and I have no problem with that. My career is overseas, and I miss time away from my family. But I am having fun. I never have to get up and go to work at all, because I'm just playing basketball. And a lot of people just see the finished product.
Exactly.
But they only see the finished product, so they see the game on Sundays or whatever the case may be, as opposed to not seeing that I go to practice twice a day. They're not seeing what I sacrifice. I go to practice twice a day. So, yeah, it's wearing tear on my body. Weight three times a week, a lot of traveling. You know, I got to listen to coaches. It's a language barrier. But at the same time, that never stops my work ethic. That never stops me from being the first one in the gym, trying to hurry up and get up a quick 200 before practice starts, and then the last one to leave and getting up another 100 just to leave to make sure that my shot is in rhythm and I can feel it and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you do prior to the game. It's your preparation, not even just with basketball. It's your preparation for whatever you are getting up to do that day or your plan is for 6 months from now. It's everything you put into it, and that's what you're going to get out of it. So my whole thing is, you got to have the desire. And once you have the desire and the motivation to actually be successful, you'll be successful. It might not come when you think it should come.
Exactly.
It's going to come when it's supposed to come. Your success or your blessing is going to come when it's supposed to come. And don't do anything with the intent of having something or receiving something in return.
Right.
You need to do everything out of the kindness of your heart. So even
exactly.
if it's giving back or, you know, giving knowledge to someone else to help them move forward in whatever direction they're trying to go in, you do it. You don't withhold information just because you don't want nobody to know. We all put here to give knowledge to the next person who's ignorant to the things that we already know. And
Absolutely.
Nobody knows everything. But at the same time, man, if I just bought a pair of Jordans, man, and somebody asked me where I get them from, people stuck in that syndrome like, nah, I ain't telling you because I don't want you to have them. I want
right.
to be the only ones with them.
Yep.
That's not how life works.
Exactly.
That's not how life works. I'm going to tell you where I got them from because you admire these shoes, whatever the case may be. I want you to feel the same comfort that I feel because I like these shoes. And that's what it is in the workforce, in basketball and football, and if you're a lawyer, doctor, it doesn't matter. Knowledge is the key to everything. And if you have some information that somebody else doesn't have, man, pass it on. But whatever it is that you decide to do, man, just work 1,000% at it. That's it.
Exactly. And that's everything you're saying. It's funny. It's scary because everything you're saying, as I'm sitting here, I hear all these scriptures in my head of like, yeah, that's Bible. Yeah, that's Bible.
Right.
Yeah, that's Bible. I mean, if you know, like I tell kids all the time, go read. If you think that you have a talent, it is an absolute sin for you to waste that talent. It's a sin because if you read the if anybody who reads the story of the talent.
Right.
Remember, Jesus told the parable about the talents, and he didn't punish the guys that took the risk, that worked hard and came back and grew the talent, and said, you know what, you gave me 5, here's 12, or here's 10. That's what God is about, growth. He's about, I ain't about you hoarding it, I'm about you giving it and using it to make more. You know, like I tell everybody, God is the greatest farmer ever in the history of the world, because he knows how to plant and work and give in order to get more. Like, that's probably why you got a lot of things, because you were willing, you were planting seed. You were, I'm going to give you this. Well, you didn't look for it because you said, well, I'm going to give it to you because I expect something in return. And that's the problem with a lot of players now, is they give things and then get mad later and say, well, he didn't give me, he didn't say thank you. Well, he didn't do this.
What?
It ain't about that. It's about giving, because that's what you want to do. You have to want to give it and do it. And so all I'm saying to you, Brian, is that in listening to this story, it's not hard to sit here and go like, man, how did Brian get here? I see the blueprint. The blueprint is hard work. Don't turn your nose up at anything. Be humble enough to say, I'll take this opportunity. Even though it ain't what I want, I take it, because I never know where it's going to lead. And then you just outworked everybody else, and you gave where you could and helped other people. And that's why you got the experience you got. And think about it. Think of how blessed you are, man. You get to do what you would do for free and get paid for it. Like that's awesome, to get up and do something you would do for free. You were doing for free and still do for free, and you get paid for it. I mean, that's bananas, man, and that's a good message to give to kids. And the last thing I want you to expound on, and this is the last thing as we end the show, is this.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk to guys about one of the things that frustrates me about players now is they ain't never got money to go get training, to pay somebody to train them, to work with nobody, to do the extra things as far as basketball. They cheap and cheesy, and they don't want to do it. But these same guys got all the money when it's time to party, drink, smoke, and do whatever they want. And I don't understand that. I don't understand how you won't pay somebody to train you, but you'll go do the free stuff. If it ain't free, you ain't doing it. Like you, you know what I'm saying?
It's because of the way it looks. It's the lifestyle. You know, a lot of it is, you know, too much BET more than anything. Watch too many videos, and they think that's the way to have fun. You know, a lot of people, you know, realistically, they don't know where I'm from, even within the city. They don't know what I do. And one of the things that I pride myself on is just living quietly. You know, I don't bother nobody. I'm a very private person. Me and you, I done told you this 1,000 times. Like,
yep.
With everything I do, man, I'm private. I'm a very private person. So I don't need, you know, the club or anything to validate me being happy. You know, don't get me wrong. I'll go and I'll have fun and enjoy myself, but. That's not something I need. I don't need everybody. I don't need to try to make myself look like something that I'm not.
Exactly.
In order to have friends or anything like that. Like, I'm cool with my kids and my family and minding my business. And I think that's a part of, you know, you get caught up in a lifestyle. Don't get me wrong. Like, sometimes people get caught up in D.C.
Right.
And D.C. will, you know, D.C. is a monster in itself. You know, it's not New York City or anything like that. But people come here, and this city does something to people that some other cities don't. That might even be bigger, maybe because you can go out every single night, you know, and find somewhere to just hang out and be around women and all of that other stuff. But, you know, that's not what the most important thing is.
Right.
You know, and one of the most important things to me is my kids.
Exactly.
So at the same time, I mean, you just have to prioritize. You just got to know when and when not to have fun.
Right.
When and when not to have fun. And fun for me is just playing basketball, realistically.
Right.
Like, I'll come home and go in the basement and just play the video game and watch my son just do donuts around the table, and that's fun for me.
Right. Exactly.
I'm cool.
There's nothing wrong with that. But there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that, but I know. It's just so, it sounds so simple, but that's what God says, that when he blesses you, even everything in your life, when you're living at peace and you're blessed, living a blessed life, you live a life that's more than you could ever dream. And the simple things mean everything to you because you know where you came from and you know the price you paid to get it.
Yep.
So you're like, man, I'm so appreciative of this moment. So, you know, with that being said, what I was kind of structuring on was I was saying that guys don't want to make the investment. I was saying as far as training, they don't want to pay or make the investment into making themselves better, but they got all the money to spend on the food and drink. That's what I was trying to
But what you said
was true, and I don't understand
that. That's what it is. It's the lifestyle or the look
that comes with
spending the money in this place. Nobody can't see you spending the money on a trainer and being in the gym with somebody. You know, so you don't get the pats on the back and the, man, oh, we had fun. Like, you don't get that group love when you actually working on your craft. A lot of people are addicted to people patting them on the back and saying,
that's true.
Man, I'm with you. I'm going with you tonight or whatever. You know, and when you're training, you're training. You're preparing for something.
Right.
A lot of people can't. They can't separate the two because they want to live a lifestyle without even putting the work in to actually achieve that lifestyle so that they can actually do it comfortably. They want to do it when they don't have it. And
absolutely.
They don't understand, like, I live by this. Life is difficult, not complicated.
Right.
Mother, you should
be
very proud.
Man, it's difficult, not complicated.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to go through some things.
Right.
Which makes it seem like, man, it's a tough time. Things just difficult right now. Things just tough right now, and it's tough. It's not complicated. Once you figure out your purpose and you figure out what you're supposed to do with yourself, man, the rest of your life is a cakewalk. Yeah, you might fall on hard times, But that don't mean the rest of your life or whatever is going, you know, is going to be the same way. You just have to relax, man, and just get through that time. Because, yeah, it's difficult, but it's not complicated, man. Living is easy. It's really easy when you actually trying to live.
Right. When you know what
you're not trying to live, or you don't even know how to live, or you don't have a clue about who you are as a person,
right?
Then yeah, living is the worst thing in the world. You trying
right.
to figure it out. That's why people commit suicide and all these other
yep.
things. But
yep.
that's for the weak-minded. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You just have to figure out a plan. Sit back, relax, and figure out a plan, and realize that the wrong things that you are actually doing. If you keep doing the same things, you won't get the same results.
Exactly.
Bottom line.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you keep spending all your money in the club, and you don't have money, then you're gonna keep not having no money.
Exactly. Exactly. But I wanna, but I just wanted to say, man. I know you got to go to the game, but I just want to say to you, Brian. You know, I want to say thank you personally,
absolutely,
for coming on this show.
Oh,
man,
no, I'm on. I still got a few minutes.
Oh, okay, cool. All right,
well, let me.
Okay, good. Well, let me say this to you. One, you better write a book because I'm gonna haunt you the rest of your life until you do it, and I'm gonna keep sending you. Remember how everybody kept saying, "Why are you here? What are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here."
Yep.
I'm gonna start
yep.
hitting you with, "Where is the book? You're not supposed
okay.
to be here without a book. Get a book."
No, it makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world
because your story is your story. I'm inspired.
If I actually sat down and just talked to you about the things that I've been through to get to this point, that's a totally different story. The basketball story is a story in itself.
Right.
But the life story is something totally different.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, you are probably the 50th person that said, man, I ain't even going to say 50th. I'm going to give you 5th. Because I don't talk like that. But at the same time, you know, one of the lines that I live on is from one of my favorite rappers. You know, mm-hmm. he says that, you know, he asks you, what you going to do? What you going to do? Because if you're sharing your success and not your struggle, you was a fool. And
right.
that's when once I heard that, that's when I actually started, you know, talking a little bit more about
mm-hmm.
the things that I've been through to get
mm-hmm.
to the point in which I was at. At first,
mm-hmm.
I was just using everything as motivation. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just doing it myself as opposed to actually maybe the things that I've been through from my neighborhood and all that other stuff to help another kid get through whatever it is that he done went through or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I don't share my success or my struggle, but I would rather share my struggle as opposed to my success.
Exactly.
Because, hey, you know,
your trouble is your struggle is your process. Your struggle
yeah.
was your process.
It's
to where you see
the process.
To what we see now,
exactly.
it's like I just see the end result of your struggle and what you've been through. And like I told you before we got on the show, I said I want to know, you know, what it takes to where you get to. And we got a little bit of that today. But I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm gonna just be flat out. Before you leave, I'm gonna find out what day you leave. And when I find
I'm
out
probably,
what day you leave,
and it's funny you said that. Listen, I'm gonna give you. I don't know the exact day, but I signed my contract today. I'm going back to the team that I played for in Italy last year.
Okay.
Right? And I know we start practice on the 25th of August. So
okay.
that doesn't say the exact day, but, you know, I'm thinking the 20th, 21st, they're going to want me out.
I'm going to get you back on here before that because my schedule is about clear, except for the 9th I have one guest, and other than that I don't have anybody else booked right now. So I'm going to
okay.
definitely talk to you and get you back on because I want to hear, today we heard the basketball, but I also want to hear a little bit, not a lot, I know you're private, but I want to hear a little bit of the struggle. I want to hear a little bit of
the struggle is, man, it's I'm open with the struggle now. You
okay.
know,
oh,
it's not even so much of you know, yeah, I'm a very private person. I just don't talk a whole lot.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But when I do talk it out, it must have purpose.
Well,
it's not
well,
just me just talking and just to say, hey, man, you know I went through this.
Right.
I'm not going to never walk up on nobody or go
mm-hmm.
around
mm-hmm.
DP or mm-hmm. Shaq or Danielle mm-hmm. or anybody like that or mm-hmm. any of my other friends and mm-hmm. say, man, you know, guess what happened to me yesterday? No, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, what goes on with me, for me. That's
right.
Not for everybody else.
Right. And that's why I said, but it's funny that you say that because, you know, this is how it always works. I always get, and Jerry will tell you, you know, I get usually good guests. And usually, you know, I pick those guests based on what they know, who they are, whatever. You know, they're interesting. But I can honestly tell you, the night I asked you, first talked to you about coming on the show, like when I first came to you, it was like, hey, man, I'm going to have you on my radio show. I know that was God. Because it was just like out of the blue. It was like I hadn't even thought of it for a while. And I was just sitting there, you was playing. And all of a sudden I just heard this voice say, you got to have him on the radio show. Now you know me, Chase. You know I don't know your personal story. You know
yeah,
I don't know
sure.
a lot about. I know your ball playing, and I know from what being around Shaq and Danielle and Shaq and Danielle and DP, I've heard little bits and pieces of what you do. But you know I don't know
yeah.
like that. So when
yeah.
you, so for me to say that, I had to be God because I don't know your story. I don't know
yeah.
none of that. But I
no,
knew something
sense.
Told me you got to get him on. You got to get him, invite him on your show. And I said,
it
hey man.
Sense.
I got to get you on. And to be honest with you, I thought that was going to be tough. Because you moved so fast.
Coming
you're like,
on the
nah,
show,
I don't want to do that.
You want to know why it wouldn't have been tough? I never turned down any interviews because it's always a platform
yep.
that may help somebody else. Like,
exactly.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I have it's probably 20 layers of skin that I have before, you know, don't ever feel like I'm the most approachable person in the world. I might not talk a lot or
right.
anything like that, and I might seem, I promise you, I'm not. Like, I'll talk to anybody in the store.
That's true.
You know, but I'm just not the overly outgoing person to actually, I might not be overly inviting initially.
Since we're
you know,
talking, wait a minute, since, I just want to do this, wait a minute, because I know Jerry's going to laugh. Hey, Jerry, in other
yeah.
words, you know what he's really saying is, he's not the overly open book that, you know, the white people you catch at the store.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. You'd be like,
I'm talking about the
you'd be like, oh, my God. This
tells
me
yeah,
a life story.
No. I don't talk at all, like, really. I've heard that my whole life. Like, people thought that I was quiet unless they knew me. So the people
mm-hmm.
that I hung with in school and things like
mm-hmm.
that, they knew who I was, and they know,
right.
like, all I do is laugh and joke and play.
Exactly.
But if I'm not around, you know, my comfort zone or my friends or my family or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
I'm just sitting and I'm very observant. I'm watching everybody that's around me. I'm watching demeanors, and I'm watching, you know, how people act and things like that. And then, you know, I gauge on whether or not that person is a turn-on or a turn-off to me. Like,
right.
I'm not... E tripping today, or
right.
no, nah, shoot something else. And but I'll
right.
catch myself, and then I'll just distance myself without even saying anything. You'll know,
right.
like, let me stop calling him, or let me stop even talking while I'm around him, because he just seems
right.
like he's real standoffish. I'm not that guy. I'm very approachable.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to me at any given time to say anything, I'm going to talk to you. I'm not going to push you to the side. And be like, all right, and just keep giving you a whole bunch of yeah. And the yeah, mean, all right, Slim, stop talking to me. I'm not. That's not the person that I am, but, you know, you have to break through a couple layers of that skin in order to
right.
really understand and know the person that I am. I just be chilling, man. I don't bother.
Right. No, and I know that about you, but I just know you, how should I say it? I know enough. You remind me, actually, and I say this, you and Shaq are a lot alike. Y'all very quiet people. Like, if you don't know Shaq seems like very mean, standoffish, you don't say nothing to him. But, you know, people will come to me all the time and be like, man, Shaq seems like he's so mean. I'll be like, man, he a fool. That dude is a
nothing,
clown.
Listen, me and Shaq used to sit in our neighborhood when I moved, because I moved from with DP and Danielle, where their mother lived
mm-hmm,
at on Minnesota
mm-hmm,
Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I moved around there, and I moved around Trinidad. That's when I first
mm-hmm.
met Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably was 11. He might have been 12. Something like that. And I didn't know who he was. I just knew he got the name Shaq from dunking on all the basketball courts, and he broke
mm-hmm.
all the rims at the recreation center.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? He broke
mm-hmm.
all the rims at the rec. And I'm trying to figure out, like, hi, this Shaq guy, he keep breaking all the rims, and the only thing we can do is play 33. We can't run a hole or nothing. Because he'll leave one rim. He left one rim up. But he was just jumping at that age. He was jumping like nobody
wow.
else, breaking all the rims.
Wow.
And once we, you know, hung out and we met him, he was playing on the court, and everybody, you know, the guys that I used to be with, we hung out. All we used to do is sit there and laugh and joke and,
mm-hmm.
you know, down on each other and all of
right.
that other stuff.
Right.
And if you ever see us interact, even including me and Danielle, his wife,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you'll understand what our relationship is and what
yeah.
kind of person I am. If you know me, I'm going to walk up to him, and I might just tell him to shut up. And
right.
he didn't even say anything. He might just look at me, and I'd just be like, shut up, and then he'd just start joning on me. Same thing with Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. Everything is a joke. I don't take nothing serious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have thick skin, man. So the hecklers and people talking in the stands while I'm playing, it doesn't bother me. It actually
mm-hmm.
motivates me. And that's
exactly.
why sometimes you don't want to turn that button on.
Exactly.
I'm not going, you're not going to get me out of my head. You ain't going to do
exactly.
nothing to motivate me. Your team going to wind up losing.
Hey, Jerry, I remember one time I was playing 2 weeks ago. We was playing them in that pool. This fool of Brian tells DP, don't say nothing to me, man. Don't say nothing to him, man. He the enemy. Because I was coaching
yeah.
the team.
I'll shake your hand after the game.
Exactly.
Don't talk to me before the game. Today is not, about you.
Hey, look, I remember, and then I remember one time when Brian came to me. Either you missed a game or you was playing a bad, you had a bad game. You had like an off game. And I remember he came to me. We won. And Chase said, he walked over to me, I was coaching. He said, yeah, you got a gift today. You got a gift
yeah,
today.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I'd have been on my
game,
I'd have lit y'all. He said, I'd have lit y'all ass up. I was laughing like I don't know what. I was like, man, he's dead serious, too.
And then we played y'all. That was a spring on because we lost y'all the first game.
Uh-huh.
And then
y'all
we beat
in the
y'all
chip,
the second
you?
Game. In the play, and I told you. I said, man, don't worry about it. I said, oh, yeah, you got a gift today. But I'll see you again, and I saw you again, and you lost.
No, but what you don't understand is, and I told Jerry this story, but the week before, I knew we were in trouble because – remember, Shaq was playing with Linkin Park, and we put KD off twice.
Yeah,
every time KD would jump to a team,
you
we put him, we would beat him.
Right,
and then he sat there on that bench.
That.
Do you remember when he was so mad? And Jerry, I got a witness. Kevin was so mad. It was him and Atiyah sitting next to each other, and Kevin said, I got something for you in the championship game. I'm sick of y'all putting me on the team. Every time I go to a team, y'all beat us. I'm not having this no more. When we get the championship, I got something for you. Me and Shaq was laughing at him. And sure enough, championship game, he had Chase. It was Kevin. Man, Kevin brought people with him. They had.
But the funny part is that team is the team that I would normally play on. So I actually, KD picked, or Miles put KD with us.
Exactly.
Any team, like the only time that I don't play with A-Wash, is down the farms.
Right.
But I played with him up Spingarn that year, which was what, summer before last, something like that?
Two summers.
You know,
ago.
And that's like my family. So mm-hmm. I just don't play with him down the farms. Like, I'm a loyal guy. So
no, that was your team, but I'm just laughing because I knew
Kevin.
Yeah,
and he said,
Kevin,
I got something for you.
Yeah,
he was going to make
Kevin,
sure that you didn't beat him no more that time.
He beat us in the championship.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sitting here right
now.
But
your team, man, you got a good group. That they play well together. I mean, sometimes, you know, I think, like, I got a lot of respect for Ojo.
Yeah.
I think he needs to be a whole lot, just from from experience, he needs to be more aggressive to make plays as opposed to just trying to keep people happy. And
But I think he does that, but knowing him for the last 3-4 years, I don't think it's to keep him happy, but he's not an offensive. If you notice, he doesn't shoot a lot of jumpers. He's a go-to-the-hole guy. But I think what he tries to do, what he's always told me, is he likes to be aggressive but get everybody involved, and then
at our position, and this is just from experience,
yep.
for him, Like, I'm always open. If somebody really want to sit down and rap to me, I'm going to talk to him. He's athletic, super quick. You know, of course, if he don't feel necessarily comfortable with shooting a lot of jump shots, he can work on that. But at the same time, he can get to the basket a lot
anytime
of times
he wants.
Whenever he wants to.
Yep.
Because he's actually stronger than what you think.
Yep.
And he's quicker than what you think.
Yep.
But it's a lot of times at the position, it's about making plays as opposed to just trying to keep everybody happy. You can keep everybody happy if you make the play. And my thing is, and I haven't seen him like in real organized basketball. I mean, I know we down the farms, we have Spinger on or wherever we play.
Right.
I like him.
Yep.
I like his game.
I love him.
And the way he plays the game. And a lot of when we play against each other, we just be talking. We talk. I'm like, Slim, you know, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to play basketball. I let the game come to me. And then when I need to be aggressive, I'll be overly aggressive. But, you know, on my teams, like the team, the people that I have on my teams, we've been playing together for a long time. So the chemistry is something so different.
And
you know,
and
so certain things that I don't even have to say or do or plays that I don't even have to make, and we all on the same page. Jeff Allen, Chucks, EPs and things like that. So, you know.
And that's what I love about Lincoln Park. They do the same thing. They've been playing together so long that they don't – y'all one of the few teams I noticed, like your team and probably Lincoln Park are the only two teams pretty much that I know of that no matter how bad things get, y'all never argue with each other. Y'all never cuss each other out and be fussing and fighting and stuff.
Oh, no,
and I love that.
We've been together for the longest.
Right.
Like, I have my game, and that's what I call them, my game, because I take – anytime I have a game or I'm playing in the league or anything like that, me, Jeff, Chuck, and DP play everywhere else together, not just in the Goodman.
Wow.
We play everywhere together. Every league that's going on, Watts, the Kenner, tournament out of Annapolis, we play together. So that's the core of the team, and we know what each other does. The chemistry is just something totally different. It's something totally different, and it's hard for people to defend it because we actually play basketball. It's not give me the ball and get out the way. My turn.
Right.
You know, they respect what I do as the point guard on the floor and the lead on the floor, and I respect what they do as Jeff being the 4 or 5, DB being the 3 or 4.
Right.
Chuck being the 2 or 3, whatever the case may be, we know what each other's going to do. But they allow me to pretty much be the coach on the floor.
Right.
And that's what makes the game go the way that it goes. Like, and I'm not saying that I'm the greatest, but our chemistry is what it is. And I know what I bring to the table as a point guard and as a leader of any team that I have the potential to play on.
Well, let me ask you this question, and this will probably be my last question because I always like to end it on this kind of a note. But let me ask you this.
Okay.
Where do you see yourself when your quote-unquote career is over? I know you'll always play. That part, I got that, and
for sure.
I never doubted that anyway. But where do you see yourself 5 years from now? Where do you see yourself when you're done
five
playing?
5 years from now,
give
I'm still
that.
Playing.
Okay.
5 years from now, I'm still playing. But
okay, well,
when
let me
my
ask
career is over.
Right, that's what I mean. I guess I'm saying when you're not overseas, you're not going professionally anymore, whatever, what are you going, what are your plans? What do you see yourself doing or what have you?
Realistically, of course, I think coaching is always in the back of my mind.
Yep.
Or on the back burner, at least.
I would agree.
Realistically, of course, my plan is to work with kids, whether it's mentoring, counseling, teaching, of course, but I want to do it in the inner city. I want to give back. I don't want to just work with kids who are actually already forced. I want to work with kids, teens, you know, 10-year-olds, catch them early. Before it's time, but kids that grew up in the environment that me and DT grew up in, and just pretty much give back and give them the confidence that you know it can be done.
Right.
It's not far fetched. It's
right.
just a matter of if you apply yourself. So
mm-hmm.
for sure, it's something to do with kids. I haven't pinpointed it yet.
Right.
I know, of course, is on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
But more so focusing on the development of adolescents and teenagers, man.
And do you? Let me ask you this: do you still have those relationships that you had with Shaq and some of those NBA players and stuff?
Everybody,
do you still have those relationships? Still?
Everybody. I just I saw Shaq last summer, and it's the same thing every time he see me. I saw Deron Williams before I left to go to Italy in December. No, beginning of January. Was home for a break. And, you know, we locked back in because I didn't have his newest number. He gave me his number. I was at the game. Matter of fact, they played the Wizards. I talked to him. And he like, man, just hit me. Just raps on me. But even still, because these people are who they are, I don't talk to them on a regular basis. I don't even reach
right.
out to them. But I'll just hit them after a game and be like, man, you did what you were supposed to do. People, you know, Jared Jack. I probably talked to him out of all the NBA guys. I probably talked to him more than I talked to anybody else.
I'm really happy for him too, man, because he went and got a new
Very
deal.
Happy.
I mean, that dude, he's one of the few dudes I can honestly say he's like you. He's a hard worker because he always keeps a job.
He's a hard worker. And I look at situations and I look at people and I look at how people are and all the relationships that I've built. And, of course, finishing my career or having a 10-year career in the NBA, of course,
mm-hmm.
would have been ideal. But, you
right.
know, I look at the guys that are there now from this area, even the guys that I know, and they I'm super happy for them. And I think us as people, we get caught up in the fact that we may not be in that position, even though that's what we wanted. So
mm-hmm.
then we tend to envy or be envious
right.
or jealous
right.
of
right.
that. And I promise you I'm not. I think we
I know
are
you're not.
I think We need to actually stop trying to see when somebody's going to lose and start putting more emphasis on, you know, focusing on a person to see how great they can become.
Exactly.
I.e. Floyd Mayweather or I.e. even LeBron.
Yeah.
You give them a lot of scrutiny because LeBron went to Miami or Floyd, they never lost. We actually,
right.
I guarantee you 70% of the people watch Floyd fights to see him lose.
Oh, exactly.
As opposed to actually seeing how great that the boy can become. I don't
that's
care how much trash you talk. You're supposed to talk shit when you fight.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I get. Yeah, but that's why I get mad. That's why I always get kind of perturbed with people who, because, I mean, I've been to Floyd's training camp twice and met him, met his father. You know, they treat me really nice, really good. And people always ask me, you know, is he really, an asshole? And I'd be like, no, he's not an asshole. That's entertainment.
No, he's not.
I said he'll talk trash in his gym. And he'll talk trash, but you got to understand, if you watch him enough and have a conversation with him, when I had a conversation with him, he said it's all entertainment. It is what it is.
It is.
Just
it's
like,
business.
Just like I had a conversation with Floyd's father this past March, and I was down there. We were sitting in the gym, and he was I think Floyd had been done from his early workout, and we were sitting there, and we were just talking about nothing. And I asked him,
right.
I said, let me ask you a question. I said, how do you feel about how people feel about when you and Floyd had that incident on HBO where y'all was, you know, kirking and mad at each other and this and
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was funny. The answer he gave was so simple. And he looked at me. He was like, you know what? He said, if anybody else had that conversation with their kid, he said, it would have been nothing thought of. He said, ours was just on TV. He said, if you think that's the first time we've had them like that, he said, man, we've had knockdown, drag-out arguments. We always like that because we so alike. He said, we just
right.
it. We talk trash, and then we take it to a place where we get serious. We get mad. He said, every father or most people have had those incidents with their sons. He said, but the only difference is ours was on worldwide TV, so everybody flipped out and acted like it was horrible, like it don't happen in their house.
Right.
I said, that's true. And he said, man, I'm a man just like anybody else. And I said, that's true. He said, Floyd is Floyd, and I'm me.
And it makes sense. But even still, I don't have a problem with somebody being cocky, arrogant, whatever the case may be, when you're fighting. That's not a team sport. That's an individual sport. So you take, you're from Detroit, I'm from D.C.
Yep.
Every time I've seen one of my boys or just people in general in the street about to fight, everybody's talking. Man, you're not going to do nothing. Man, you scared. You a sucker.
Exactly.
You this.
Exactly.
What's the difference
in
Floyd doing it and it's on TV?
Yeah, but see, I always shut people up.
People do that without even about to be in a fight, talk about how much money they got and all this stuff. So what?
Exactly.
Who cares?
But,
I don't care.
But what gets me, though, is I told people, I said, and I'm old enough to know this, but I tell them, I said, yeah, you guys talk trash about how bad Floyd, just like when they got mad about his man. What's his name? Adrian Broner. What he said after the final thing, I said, but y'all the same dudes who admire Muhammad Ali. I said, but y'all go back and look at the films when Muhammad Ali had a rubber gorilla in his hand and was calling Joe Frazier gorilla and smacking a gorilla with his hand at the press table. I said he was the one who brought trash talk to boxing. I said before then it wasn't that bad. I said he was the guy. I remember the film, and I wish I could find it. I'm going to post it on No Chaser. But he went into a guy's training camp while he was sparring and went up to the roof and brought the camera coming and started talking trash to the dude in his training camp. And I'm sitting here like, how y'all get mad at these people because they talk trash when the guy that you love and admire so much did the same thing?
Right.
Did the same thing. So
it's fine.
It's funny, man. But we're going to let you go, man. But look, man, I just want to thank you, man, from the bottom of my heart, man, for coming on my show. You've been one of my top guests.
No problem.
I just appreciate it. And look, we're going to have you on before you leave again. I'm going to have you back on the show because I got to hear the struggle, and that's what I'm gonna promote the next time because I want people to know what makes Brian Chase what he is, because I see it when you play. But I want people to see the process, because I want people to know this is not just a man who popped up one day and he just got lucky.
Right.
He put his ducks in a row. Now we know it wasn't luck.
It was hard work.
Now we want to hear the struggle, and that's what I want.
And thank you, Mom, for coming on also.
Yes.
Can you come back too, Mom.
No problem. In fact, Brian, if you don't mind, I'm inviting both of you. I'm gonna call you, and you can bring both back on because I think, obviously, Mom was part of the struggle, and there was nothing better than to have both of you on, and you know, hear from both perspectives. And if you will allow me, and it's not, you know, not disrespecting, I would love to have both of you back on the show, if you don't mind.
That's perfect.
So I will call you in about another, give me another week or two, and then I will call you, and I will schedule it. And I know Jerry will be excited, and we're going to promote it even. In fact, I have a lot of time to promote it. I'm going to definitely get, I'm going to call you next week. Once y'all lock you in on a date, then we'll start promoting it. I'll make a new promo, and we'll promote it again. And then I'll give you everything so you can promote it on your end with your people.
Okay, that's fine. I just got a text saying that we play Tuesday on the phone, so I'll probably see you before you even call me.
Exactly. So I'll see you. I'll definitely be down there. Thank you, Brian.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Jerry, thanks for being on the show. And,
no problem.
We'll see you next
week. Thank you, Mother, for being on the show, too.
Yeah. Thanks
a
lot, Ms. Chase. I appreciate you. All right.
Okay.
With that, we are out.
Okay. All right,
see you later.
Baby. Go. All right.